So for two Sunday evenings, we're going to look at a subject that I've wanted to look at for quite a long time, which is how as Christians we engage with the culture around us. Now, I think you'd agree that's a vital subject, but it's one I don't think many of us have thought about very clearly. And the reason for that is probably that during our lifetimes, the situation has changed completely. For many centuries, those of us in the West, i.e. Europe and America, have lived in a pretty much Christian culture. And the church didn't have to think too hard about how to relate to culture because essentially the culture was Christian. But sometime in the middle of the 20th century, Western culture began to change quite dramatically. And in Britain and Europe, church attendance fell precipitously pretty much from the end of the Second World War onwards. In America, it rose initially after the war, and it didn't start to fall until the 60s. But in America, it was obvious that a major cultural shift was underway. Now, before this change, people were largely Christianized in their thinking. They believed that the world was created by God. They believed in a broadly Christian understanding of right and wrong. They probably believed even in some kind of heaven and hell. The general ethical code was framed by Christianity. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that people were personally Christians or that they always followed that code. But it was the way that, broadly speaking, people understood the world. In the 1940s and 50s, a Christian minister could say to almost any young adult, "Be good," and that person would know what they meant. By the 1980s, if you said that, I guess the answer would be, well, what's your definition of good, and who are you to tell me what to do anyway? Just as one example of the change, the percentage of babies born to people who weren't married stayed very stable for hundreds of years. It was down at less than 10%, typically about 6%. And then in the 60s, it started to rise to over 50%, where it is today. And that's pretty much universal across even North America and also the whole of Europe. So that's a major change in social morality. That's just one index of it. Now, we could spend a whole evening discussing the reasons for this change. They might include greater economic prosperity, which gave people much more individual freedom and freedom of travel. Travel became much more affordable and much easier. There was also far more immigration, and so people were exposed in a way they hadn't been to non-Christian cultures and religions. Television, of course, had a huge impact. The pill separated sex from procreation, very significant. And, you know, the whole range of different factors. Some people have said it was the perfect storm for Christianity to encounter. All those things began to change at the same time. And with that came a huge change in people's focus from being on collective duty and social responsibility to individual freedom and self-fulfillment. The dominant cultural story went from how do I do what is right and my duty for society to change to how do I find myself and fulfill myself and become the person that I was created to be. Now, both of those things are good, but there was definitely a complete shift in the focus. Now, generally, this de-Christianization has been stronger in Europe than in America, but I don't think we should underestimate how significant it's been in the States. Just one example, in 1952, 75% of Americans said religion was very important to them personally. 75% in 1952. By the mid-70s, that had fallen to about 35%. So from 75% to 35% within 20 or 25 years. And of course, among younger people, younger adults, that shift was even more dramatic. So what did this mean for the church? Obviously, before this happened, people who weren't Christians needed to be persuaded of many things in order to become Christians. But there was also much in the general Christian background of society that they accepted and took for granted. For instance, they needed to understand what Jesus' death meant for them. But they didn't need to be told about the fact that Jesus had lived and did the things recorded in the Bible, because generally speaking, they knew about those. They needed to understand that God was more holy than they thought, but not that God existed or that he was likely to be angry about human disobedience. They needed to see that they were more alienated from God than they'd previously thought, but they didn't need to be persuaded that there was some kind of universal standard of right and wrong. And so people like Billy Graham could speak at big rallies, and the people he'd be speaking to would largely agree with the background that he was coming from and take for granted much of the worldview that he was explaining. It also meant it wasn't too difficult to bring people to church. Church was generally seen as a good and important thing in the community. Just one example, I don't know if you've heard of the management guru Peter Drucker. He moved from Austria to New York in the 1950s, and he went to the bank to ask for a mortgage. And the bank manager asked him immediately whether he went to church or synagogue. Now, he was very surprised by this, because in Austria, that wasn't the question your bank manager would ask you. So he asked why the bank manager was asking this. And the answer was, well, why would we trust a man who didn't go to the church or the synagogue? Now, you can't imagine that happening today, can you? It's just a completely different world. And that was in the 50s in America, New York. Now, all of that meant that Christians didn't have to think too hard about culture. In fact, culture generally was seen as a bit of a distraction. Keen young Christians were told they should become clergymen or missionaries. They weren't told they should be a Christian artist or a Christian business person. Culture wasn't what really mattered. The way to advance Christianity was through evangelizing people personally, winning the world one soul at a time. And people said, well, if we had more real Christians, more committed Christians, then society would be a much better and fairer and juster and more Christian place. Now, of course, there's truth in that. But in practice, it meant a withdrawal from the world. And Christians weren't really interested in being involved in business or the arts or other professions so much, because that wasn't seen as really significant. And of course, in the long run, that had a dramatic effect. Because if Christians and the most able Christians only focus on evangelizing and being involved in ministry, and no Christians write novels or make movies or do any of make scientific discoveries, before long, Christian concepts like right and wrong and sin and grace begin to become rather remote and hard to understand for people. And so when we try and explain the gospel, the good news of Jesus dying for us, people find it much harder to understand, because all of the terms that we're using are unfamiliar. This cultural shift away from Christianity was very sudden, and it happened, I think, so quickly that the church was largely caught unprepared. And it had to start thinking about how to relate to a non-Christian culture in a way that the church hadn't done really since the early centuries and the early church. So how did the church react? One of the first people to do so was an American called Francis Schaeffer. I don't know if any of you have read his books. He moved to Switzerland and he set up a community called L'Abri, which is French for shelter. And that attracted thousands of younger people from all over Europe and indeed from the States. And he tried to begin to give a Christian perspective on contemporary culture. So he'd talk about existentialism and the films of Fellini and Bergman and modern art and pop music lyrics and so forth. And that was quite shocking to some people, because many Christians in America were discouraged from going to Disney movies at that point. So somebody starting to talk about Bergman, you know, was a bit of a shock. He also wrote about social justice issues, particularly the issue of abortion. And he said that Christians ought to act politically to stop abortion killing vast numbers of unborn children. The American Supreme Court, in a famous case of Roe versus Wade in 1973, had allowed much freer abortion than had happened previously. So Christians started to say, well, we can't just go off in the corner and ignore culture. We've got to get engaged in it. And around that time in America, we started to see the emergence of the religious right. Now, that didn't happen in Europe, where, of course, the church is generally weaker than in America. But in the US, Christians started to say, we've got to recapture politics for Christ and become much more engaged and gain power. And generally speaking, the religious right favored freedom for the individual, and that meant low taxes and a small public sector. Although there was also a strong commitment to defend America militarily, and so a support for the US armed forces. So that was one way in which Christians started in America to engage with culture, although nothing equivalent really happened in Europe. A different response within the church was the growth of what people called seeker-sensitive church, and that was led by Willow Creek Community Church in Chicago. How many of you have heard of Willow Creek? A few of you, not very many. They started to have conferences here in the early 90s, and what they were doing was recognizing that traditional church was becoming increasingly alien and irrelevant to non-believers. So they started to reinvent church using, you might say, entertainment techniques or business marketing techniques. And they'd use a lot of drama, they'd have dramas about family conflict and so forth, to try and make Christianity more engaging and relevant to people without a church background. And then two other more recent trends, which kind of overlap and it's hard to separate them, are emerging church and missional church communities. And they say we have to learn to do church radically differently. We can't just put on services in a Gothic refrigerator and expect people to turn up. One of the influences behind emerging church was someone called Leslie Newbegin, who used to live in Herne Hill, actually died about 10 years ago. And he had been a missionary in India and eventually a bishop in India. And he said that this Western church has got to learn to be a missionary to its own culture. In the same way as if you went out to India, you'd learn about the culture and you'd understand it and you'd try and adapt to it. We've got to start to learn to do that in our own culture. And he was quite influential in that thinking. Missional or emerging church emphasized doing justice and serving the community and involvement in different parts, different aspects of culture making, particularly the arts. They also emphasize spiritual formation, often using very old techniques from the Catholic or the Orthodox Church, which was very different from how people had tended to operate within the church. There was a strong focus on building community. And so emerging church said, we are a more relational community alternative to a consumerist, individualist society. The emerging church said that the religious right had sold out to American free market capitalism, and that the seeker-sensitive church movement had sold out to consumerism. And they said that by trying to influence a non-Christian culture, in fact, those two movements had capitulated to it. They'd been sucked into it and become part of it. And they said, this is a new way for the church to be different. Now that, you can see the clock, but I can't, but I don't know how long that was. That's a very quick overview of 50 years of cultural change. And I thought I'd give you a chance to comment or make any observations on that. And then we're going to sing a song, and then I'm going to talk about four different models of how the church can engage with culture, different approaches to how the church should be in a non-Christian culture. And I'll talk a bit more about them later. All four of them have got different strengths and weaknesses, so I think by looking at the different approaches, we'll begin to start to understand some of the issues. So, Stuart, do come back if you want to. You don't have to stay down there. In the time left, I'm going to look at four different models of how Christians can engage with culture. If you take the whole of the Bible, obviously there's a huge amount of material about the people of God engaging with the non-godly world, as it were. And, you know, leaving aside the whole of the Old Testament, which got a huge amount about it, I chose four New Testament readings that give us some principles about how to engage with the world. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks about the church being the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Salt is something that penetrates into other things. He says, a city on a hill cannot be hidden. He also says, maybe you remember at his trial to Pilate, my kingdom was not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to defend it. So how do you put those two together? He talks in John 17 about the disciples being in the world, but not of it. They're not in the world any, or not of the world any more than I am of the world, he says. But my prayer is not that you take them out of the world. And then we got Peter's letter, first letter to Christians, and he describes them as aliens and strangers in the world. But he says, live such good lives among the pagans that they will see your good deeds and glorify your Father. So you're living your lives among the pagans, even though you're strangers and aliens in that world. And then finally we had Paul in Athens, who engages with the Athenian culture. He quotes their poets, he looks carefully at their temples, and he says, what you worship as something unknown, I'm going to proclaim to you. So he's kind of saying, well, what you're already groping towards, I can give you the answer to. So those are some quite interesting passages, but how do we put them all together and begin to understand how to relate to the world? Well, the classic 20th century thinking on this was in a book by an American theologian called Richard Niebuhr, and the book was called Christ and Culture, and it was published in 1956. And he used five models, and helped by Tim Keller, I have simplified it to four, or in fact Tim Keller simplified it to four, and I've copied him. But four different models for how Christians relate to culture. Now, the first model is called transformationist. Transformationist. That says that all Christians should be fully engaged in every aspect of the world and aim to transform the culture in every area in which they're working. So if you're a Christian doctor or a Christian lawyer or a Christian artist, you should be working in a Christian way and trying to transform that bit of the world and make it more Christian. The original thinking behind this came from somebody who was Dutch prime minister called Abraham Kuyper, and he was also a Christian theologian, and he was around the end of the 19th century. And he gave a famous talk at the opening of the Free University of Amsterdam in 1880. And he came up with a famous statement, which you probably heard me quote a number of times. And he said this, there is not a square inch in the whole domain of human existence over which Jesus Christ does not proclaim, this is mine. Not a square inch over which Jesus Christ does not proclaim, this is mine. So we should be engaging in everything from a Christian, uniquely Christian perspective. And the transformationists argue that your work is different if you're a Christian. If you're a Christian doctor, you're a doctor in a completely different way because of your Christian worldview. And worldview is a very important part of the thinking of transformationists. So you should be involved in every aspect of the world, every part of culture. So transformationists, picking up Daphne's point, emphasize the importance of secular work. Doing your job well is a key way of bearing witness to Jesus. And they said that everyone is coming from some sort of faith position. So an atheist has a faith position, and an agnostic who says we just can't know has a faith position, and that influences their work. And so Christians should be open and unashamed about their faith position in every aspect of culture. And then you'll be salt and light, changing every part of the world for good. So that's the first model, transformationist. The second model is relevance model, which is the most positive about the culture around us. And it says that Christianity is fundamentally compatible with culture. God is at work in all social movements that promote peace and justice and the common good. So those movements, people like Oxfam, for instance, they're good, but they're not just good, they're also God's work. God is active in those kind of movements, even if they're not Christian. And the primary way for church to engage culture is to adapt to the fact that culture and society are always changing, and to join in with what God is already doing in the world. God is active outside the church in the way that he was active through Cyrus in Babylon and all sorts of people in the Old Testament. And, you know, when there is greater reconciliation and greater harmony between individuals and races and nations, we should recognize that and be involved with it and support it. And they criticize the church for failing to adapt to cultural change and so becoming irrelevant to people who don't come to church. Church should be much more involved in politics and fighting for social justice and so forth. And it shouldn't be afraid to use techniques from business or marketing or entertainment, like the seeker-sensitive church of Willow Creek. Emerging church may be another example of that. Instead of confronting a postmodern, less rationalist world, they say we should adapt to it and accept that the world is less swayed by argument and more by beauty. And so we should aim to have more beauty in the church, just as one example. So that's the relevance model. Now, the third model is very different from that, and it's counterculturalist. Okay? And those say that the church is a contrast to the world, a very different society. The kingdom of God, they say, is focused on the church, not on the world. Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this world." And so human society will always be basically unchristian. It'll be full of greed and selfishness and power, and the strong will oppress the weak. So we shouldn't expect a lasting improvement in human society, because it will always be dominated by those things. Christ's kingdom, on the other hand, is the opposite of that. It's countercultural. It's based on surrender of power and service of others and gentleness of love. Stanley Hauerwas, who is one of the leaders of the countercultural approach, said, "The world, for all its beauty, is hostile to the truth." This group say if there's a cultural crisis in the church today, it's because the church has stopped being truly the church. The church has just become like the world. And so no wonder people don't see there's anything different and special about us. When Christians try to make the world more like the church, they say, in the end, they just sell out and they make the church. They try to make the world like the church, but actually they just make the church like the world. Yeah, and it ends up, the Western church ends up corrupted by capitalism and consumerism and selfishness. Stuart would probably agree with that. Don't interrupt yet. So counterculturalists say we shouldn't try to be like the world and adapt to its culture. We should go outside the camp, follow Christ outside the camp, and identify with the poor and the marginalized and live a radically different, simple life. So that's a very different approach. I mean, there's truth in all of these, isn't there? The counterculturalists say the church shouldn't try to bring in the kingdom in the world. It should be a sign to the world, a city on a hill that lives very differently. And historically, people like the Anabaptists or the Amish in America have lived like that. And in today's terms, the emerging church quite often, or the missional church, is trying to create missionary communities that live very closely together and operate by a very different set of values. Okay, so that's the first three. Transformationists, get involved in the world and change it. Relevance, lots of good things are happening already, so we should recognize them and join in with them. Or countercultural, that say we should just be different and not try to be like the world at all. And then the last group is the two kingdoms model. And they say God operates through two different kingdoms. He rules all of creation, but he does it in different ways. One way is his activity in the world through common grace. You know, God sends the rain, and people have an innate recognition within them of goodness and justice and truth and the value of human beings. So God is involved and active in every human life. And that's the kind of common kingdom, if you like. That, if you go back to the Old Testament, God made a covenant with Noah that applied to the whole world and said he would never again destroy the earth in a flood. And so God is active through that kingdom in many ways, and we should come alongside our non-Christian neighbors and do everything we can to promote the common good. So that is the common kingdom. But then the two kingdoms model says there's another kingdom, and that is the redemptive kingdom, the kingdom of God's people, the people who have come to know God personally. And in our terms today, of course, that is the church. And the covenant that that is based on is not the covenant with Noah, where God says he won't destroy the world. It's the covenant with Abraham, where God says to Abraham, I'll make you into a people, and I will multiply you and draw you together and bring you to me. And so God, that's the kingdom of God and the redemptive kingdom. So Christians are members of this kingdom. They're building up the kingdom. They're evangelizing, they're discipling, and that is real kingdom work. That is ultimately what matters. That is what will endure. And when the liberal church strives for relevance, or the conservative right tries to grab political power, all they are doing is ultimately selling out to the world's ways. You have to see that God operates through a different kingdom, not in the way that the world operates. Now, the two kingdoms people, like transformationists, believe in the importance of secular work, because they say the whole world is God's world. But they don't expect secular work to transform the world. They say your job, if you're a doctor, is to be a good doctor. And they say there isn't a fundamental difference between a good Christian doctor and a good atheist doctor, because being a doctor is about caring for people and doing it well. And all you can do is do it well and not expect people to become Christians because you're a good doctor. They say people become Christians and ultimately will endure because they're part of God's kingdom, the redemptive kingdom, not the common kingdom that everyone shares in. So secular work is important, but don't expect to make the world Christian. That's not how God operates. God operates through his own people, the church. And the purpose for a secular state is to restrain evil and avoid evil things happening, but it's never going to make the world a perfect world. And so don't expect too much of it. Don't try to build a Christian state, because the state will never be Christian, because only people within the redemptive kingdom, within the church, can ultimately know and follow God. So do you get a sense of those different approaches? I mean, as you hear each one, you might think, well, I agree with that. And then you hear the next one, you think, maybe that's better. Because there's a bit of truth in all of them, isn't there? And I'll just summarize them again briefly and then see if you've got any comments. And we haven't got too long left. Transformationist says we've got to be involved in every aspect of the world. When you do your work, you do it uniquely, differently as a Christian, and so you're transforming every aspect of the world. Relevance sees God at work out there in the world, and the church ought to be involved and join in the things of the world. Countercultural says the church is a sign of a different way, and the church should not try to be like the world, it should be different. And Two Kingdoms says God is at work in two ways, one in the world and one in the church, and we should see that the two things are different and not get them all mixed up. Okay?